do with an arts degree. I'm still not sure I know. I skipped 3 years worth of lectures just to binge watch your full shows. There must be some scholarship for accruing worthless knowledge. It's my only talent, honey. That and losing money. Let your excess hex debts rest and then just join us while we start on our bachelor.
Hello.
And welcome back to the Bachelor of Hearts podcast, the Bachelors Australia podcast that asks the question, Max, have you seen The Notebook? What do you think happens in The Notebook? You haven't seen The Notebook.
I've of course not seen The Notebook. I've seen The Journal.
Oh, really? What's that?
Well, The Journal is a great film where the man who is a lumberjack hands over a handcrafted book to the nice blonde woman who then goes on a date with another man. It's chaos, let me tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah, it yeah. sounds juicy.
What happens in The Notebook? I couldn't tell you. I feel like there's rowing, probably. More like the boat book, am I right?
Yeah, it is mostly rowing.
Mm.
It's like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of just like, oh boy, I'm getting tired.
Like, you know, Rowan Gosling.
You know, yeah, you know who stars in it? Rowan Atkinson. speaking of stars, hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm Xavier Obetsky Noonan. I'm one of the stars of this podcast, I suppose. I love The Bachelor. I'm on bird watch this week. I'm going to talk to you about a bunch of birds that I spotted in the podcast. I'm very excited about it. And of course, I hate the coronavirus. And joining me, as always, is my co-host with the mo-host, Mr. Max Flaps Quinn. Oh, it sounds weird. When
very like strange that you've chosen that, but that's fine, listener. Hello, thank you for joining us here for our recap of episode 2 of The Bachelors, season 11, season 2, whatever we're throwing a dart at today.
I suppose we're just saying both forever now, right?
I think so, right? Now, yeah. Before we get going any further, we're recording today on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging and say hi to you if you're a First Nations Bachelor of Hearts listener. Heaps to unpack from this second episode, not just the journal, but the swimming.
Journal, swimming, birds, lots to go on. I wanted to start by just saying and talking a little bit briefly about what's been going on in the last 24 hours of the world of The Bachelor. Because as we've addressed already, they're putting these things out quickly. We're trying to put our things out quickly as well. So Channel 10 has unveiled this new strategy, I think perhaps specifically as a lifeline to the two of us personally.
Thank you, Channel 10.
In which directly after each episode airs on telly, the next one will be uploaded to Templay. So if you are really chomping at the bit, you can be an episode ahead, which for us is fantastic. As far as we're concerned, this is super helpful. But I did want to talk to you, Max, briefly about like how much do you think this is going to impact the way that the season is received? Essentially, it seems like, to me at least, that they're kind of incentivizing people to not watch the live broadcast in a way. It's thrown my group chat into disarray. It means that the diehards are less likely to live tweet or thread or blue sky or whatever. I wonder what your thoughts are about this.
Good. These are my thoughts. Yeah. My thought is this is good, selfishly, but also for the franchise. You are going to collect the older audience who are going to watch at nighttime and don't know how to use 10Play anyway, mm-hmm. but you are giving the diehards, the inbuilts, a chance to get at it earlier, and we know that that audience exists and that we are among them. I think that this is a best of both worlds parlay, and let me tell you also, we're airing during a non-ratings period in Australian television. So look, as much as we'll get the figures from overnight, realistically, doesn't count quite as much as it does during a much more heavily rated televised period.
Right. And in fact, I wanted to use this as a chance to segue into a very brief ratings conversation. I think maybe we should touch on this briefly. The overnight ratings from the premiere episode are in. The numbers aren't great, as we probably all expected. 224,000 people tuned in to watch the show on Channel 10, which is down 27% from the premiere of the previous season at the start of the year. And it's a good 25,000 fewer viewers from the previous lowest rated episode of any Australian Bachelor franchise show, which was episode 8 of that season earlier this year. Now, obviously, this is in part due to the early release of the episode on 10Play. A lot of people, including us, did not watch the live broadcast because we were able to check it out earlier. So it's, you know, it's 224,000 viewers, not including anybody who watched on that service. And so we'll get a slightly better picture in about a week when the consolidated ratings come out. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some headlines over the next couple of days of, you know, as we often do, of like, why don't they take this thing out the back and shoot it already? You know, like, this is not so good. And even though I like to be as optimistic as I can about this type of stuff, when you look at it and you see that it, like, the premiere of a new season of The Bachelor was conclusively beaten by not just like 7 News and 60 Minutes, but also repeats of Joanna Lumley's Britain and border security. It's not looking super good in my estimation.
I hear you. Look, the TV show that we made back in 2018 premiered to 265,000 overnights.
Okay.
And at the time, I remember thinking, look, that's not great, but it's decent for a brand new offering.
Yeah.
This, I think we're 5 years down the road, we're pivoting so much heavier to video on demand, and if you're hitting in that 300,000, maybe higher, video viewers on demand, probably you've got enough of a sustainable product to keep doing this. And at this point, I think that that's more what this is about, is this is a... I think about this in terms of content a lot with artists who ask me, like, what do I need to do on the internet? How do I be relevant or whatever? Like, you need to develop a repeatable format and you need to be engaging within it. And I think that the show is succeeding in creating one of those.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. It's very easy to, like, sound the death bells, or is that a phrase? That can't be
sound the death bells, Xavier.
I've made that up, but we were saying the same thing at the start of the year, you know, like, yeah. We were saying, like, these numbers aren't tenable. It's insane. You know, like, how are they going to keep? And then they did another season. So, like,
exactly right. You want to throw flowers on the casket already, but I don't think that that is quite how this works anymore, particularly if there is kickback from tourism industries around the country.
Sure. And I think also particularly, I wonder how much this matters, but it certainly matters to us. There is a level of quality that is being achieved here. I was a little hard on the first episode, and I really, really liked the episode that we'll be discussing today. I don't know if it was a difference in my own mood or whether it was, you know, I felt like this episode had a lot of energy in the way
did
that
I win
the,
you over?
I mean, maybe it was you. Maybe it was you. There's every chance. I love you. I respect you. Your words mean a lot to me, Max Quinn. But also, I think, like, as we're progressing, I think some of the choices that have been made with this season are starting to make sense to me, starting to pay off. So I'm thinking, like, even though maybe the ratings aren't as high as they could be right now, maybe it's our fault. And maybe what we can do is, with our massive sphere of influence, we can sort of help to bolster the ratings a little bit, spread some good word of mouth, and sort of, you know, save the show from extinction.
Well, this is it. And look, not to get too far behind the scenes, but we've been in touch with people from the production company who have said to us, this season is really good. And look, obviously, every time someone makes a TV show, they want to say to you, it's really good. But I am inclined to believe it this time around. I think that this season might be good.
Yes. And so with this podcast, I think we are going to be the bikini car wash that we're doing to save the rec center, you know?
Now, that's a reference to a movie that I have not
seen.
No,
it's just real life. You know, this mainstream commercial reality TV show is like the only place that a bunch of misfit teens like us can really let it all hang out and be ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, this is the place where we go after school, where we feel like we're, you know, a sense of community or whatever. And like, even though these evil land developers want to bulldoze it to make room for a luxury high-rise building, we're going to give it everything we've got to raise enough money to buy it back.
Are you telling me Porky's?
I don't know. I haven't seen Porky's. But Max, did you bring those big sponges like I asked? Or are we just going to have to, like, soap up our bodies and get to work, you know, do it the old-fashioned way?
you know what? I bought a couple squeegees. I didn't expect that this is what we would be doing, but I'm happy to be moving ahead with this Breakfast Club inspired episode.
I don't know if this is from a specific movie.
Oh, you've just made this up.
Well, it's a thing. It's a trope.
You could tell me the plot of any movie and I would be like, yes, that's correct.
This is what happens in Star Wars A New Hope. The
Do you know what?
Original
I've
one.
I've always thought that R2-D2 might look pretty good in a little bikini.
Can we sell those?
Yeah.
We'll start a merch shop just for... Like, bikinis you can put in what? On your trash can, I guess? I guess people don't have an R2-D2.
Mankinis. Borat Mankinis.
Ooh, that's a mashup waiting to happen. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, this is going to be both our most successful critically and also our most financially successful episode. We're leveraging the wonderful work we do here into a new industry.
And leveraging the intellectual property of several other institutions, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, I feel like they're pretty chill about that kind of stuff. Who owns Star Wars these days? Someone chill, I bet.
They don't seem litigious.
No, not at all. Max, I have so much I want to talk to you about with this episode. I don't want to muck around anymore. Well, you know, kind of tempted to muck around a bit longer, but let's find the muck around on our way. As we recap, The Bachelors, Australia, season something, episode 2.
Yes.
We begin with drone shots of the Melbourne skyline, and in case you were worried that they were going to stick with their guns with the outside-the-box music choices from the previous episode, don't worry, there's still plenty of space for generic, license-free, quote-unquote, anthems with lyrics like, "It's you and me against the world. We are the same. I can't contain it." Music choices, are they hitting for you, Max Quinn?
The music choices for me are always splendid on this show. It gives me a real insight into the kind of lowest common denominator that is accepted for like one unit of television song. And that's something that I aspire to create in my own time.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, just like something that mostly unobtrusive, but if you look at it too long, you're like, what the fuck is this?
That's precisely right.
Yeah. I do like that. The Bachelors meet at the Auburn Hotel in Hawthorne East, whose three most recent reviews on TripAdvisor are all one star. Not looking too good. And the three stars of this show debrief their first night over a pint. Max, they don't have schooners over there. What's going on?
No, they don't have schooners. And in particular, I thought what was interesting here is that we had two schooners of what I will assume are Carlton. The Ben and the Luke schooners, and then Wesley had a pint of something that looked like apple juice.
I was going to say human piss, but I do need to go to the doctor because my piss is not looking good.
I mean, between the piss and the pubes on yesterday's episode, you're
did
really
that make the
way.
Edit? I was going to ask.
It certainly did.
Fantastic! Wow, I can't wait to see how many people listen to this episode. Ben's standout was Angela. Wes was most impressed by both Bria and Holly, and Luke singles out Ellie. And Ben says he met Ellie too, adding, "I didn't realize that it was the Ellie that you guys were talking about."
What do you mean, bro?
There's no way.
I don't understand what's going on upstairs with Ben.
I did think that's a good point, and we'll get back to it. But I did think this was almost smooth. You know, like on one level, I'm like, to be fair, they do tend to cast people with the same name on this show.
Yeah.
Like, there is a chance that maybe there are a couple of Ellies swarming around. But also, like, is he really trying to fool the others here? I don't know.
Right, and he's like, oh yeah, but then it was like Ellie with the blonde hair, and I was like, what are you doing? How is this any better for you at this moment?
Right. We then cross to another building, and text on screen tells us that this is the girls' mansion. So it's not the mansion from the previous episode. This is a 6-bedroom 1850s residence with resort-style grounds, stained glass features, swimming pool, spa, billiard room, and bar. It is located in Brighton. I looked it up. It sold for between $4 and $6 million the last time it was on the market.
My word.
Yeah, pretty upscale.
Great Gatsby.
Gadzooks. What were all this? Jiminy Cricket. Jumpin' Jehoshaphat. I do find it interesting that it's not called the Bachelor Mansion. It's not like we're not actually using the term Bachelor Mansion this season. And also the fact that it's not called the Bachelor Mansion, you would think maybe it would be called the Women's Mansion, but it is specifically the Girls' Mansion.
Something infantilizing about it, isn't there?
The Bachelor just can't stop, you know?
No.
Anyway, the women seem to love it. Arthi says, "This house is such a vibe, hey." And she ITMs that it's great having three men to choose from. She's excited to get to know all of them. So let's intro these single dates, which we jump into. The first one is Luke and Ellie. So following up from their balcony kiss on night one, Luke has decided to bring Ocean Ellie on the first single date of the season. They meet outside at a fork in the road where Luke says he's got a romantic surprise for her and then jokes with her that it's a priest who is going to marry them. I thought this joke might come from a different Bachelor.
Yep. I liked it. I liked it that it came from Luke because it was non-serious.
Me too. And it felt kind of unexpected and I wasn't weighed down by being like, oh, fuck. You know? Like,
Right.
If Wes made that joke, I'd be like...
This might actually be real.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Ellie says, ready to get blessed? And then Luke goes, achoo! It's a joke I was very proud of this morning.
Yep. You sure made it.
Yeah, I did. Delete it, obviously. Luke ITMs, he wants to turn up the romance for this date, so he's making sure all his ducks are in a row, and then we cut to footage of two ducks, and Max Quinn, you know I am not specifically an expert on this, but I strongly believe that these two ducks were enjoying the sacred act of mating.
They were ducking.
They really were. The ducks are like side by side in the water, and then one of the ducks climbs up on top of the other one from behind. It is like quite explicit.
We have been talking a lot about bird sex on this podcast.
I know. I was so delighted
recently,
this came up.
Look, this was a good thing for me to experience as well, because what we have learned in a previous series that we've been covering called The Golden Bachelor, which airs in the US, is all about bird sex and how they rub their cloacas together to exchange sperm. It's very treacherous, listener. This is a whole different situation because ducks have got more of a screwdriver situation going on.
Right, yeah, I believe it's described as a corkscrew. I think the details get more harrowing from there. I think maybe we could step around it. But I was curious, like, how they actually got the duck fuck footage, you know? Were they just filming the ducks and they just so happened to start doing it? Or were they, like, you know, playing some sexy duck music to them or something?
Sometimes when life gives you lemons, you don't question it.
When life gives you lemons, you wait for the two lemons to fuck and then you film it. Luke and Ellie arrive at their destination. It is a big pond in the shape of a heart. And as they climb into it, it's not an anatomically correct heart, by the way. That would be interesting. They climb into a rowboat and Luke ITMs the inspiration for the date was one of his all-time favorite movies, The Notebook. Max, I know you haven't seen it, but I'll just tell you very briefly about my favorite part of The Notebook.
Thank you, please.
This is the scene. It's quite an iconic scene. I think it's been referenced in Bachelor before when Ryan and Rachel are making out in the boat, in the rain. His shirt's going all see-through. It's very hot. And then in the background, if you look closely, you can see these two aquatic birds who are just absolutely going to town on one another. And I think it really brings the scene together, you know?
Are these gay ducks? Is that what we think if they're going to town on one another?
Oh, well, you know, I didn't actually see, you know, they cut away before we could really, like, investigate. You know what I mean?
And I think... Ducks be gay?
Ducks are allowed to be gay, Max. Come on, it's 2023.
Yeah, you're right. We can have a pride shark. We can have two gay ducks on The Bachelor.
That's right. Exactly. Thank you so much. Yes,
you know
I
what?
Agree.
It's good for The Bachelor that they're doing this much representation.
You know, we thought they had like dusted off their hands and decided they were done with it after Brooke Blurton's season. Mm. But here we are taking steps into a bold new future. I'll absolutely love to see it. Luke is unfortunately no Ryan Gosling, at least when it comes to rowing. Ellie is being nice about it, but you can sense him sweating a little bit as he sort of pathetically pushes the boat around in a circle. He keeps blaming the wind.
Rowing's hard.
Oh, do you have any experience?
Look, I grew up in Ballina. not sure I've ever mentioned that on this show.
Hang on
before.
A sec. Whoa. Yeah, no. Slow down. Hang on a sec.
A lot of things to unpack there. But look, I have tried all of the water sports at the behest of my dad, who was a swimming teacher.
Hang on a sec. All of them?
Oh, buddy. Like, you name it, I am certain that I have done it.
Okay. No further questions, Your Honor.
Water polo. Nippers as a youth? Absolutely.
Me? Okay.
That awful thing where you have to run up the beach and capture a flag and then run back? Not for me. Mm. What's this one? Windsurfing? You know about this guy? Windsurfing?
It looks like you're flipping a table sort of thing.
Well, yeah, because you sort of got to flip the ski back in the air after you fall.
Looks like you're stealing the silverware from the Bachelor Mansion.
Yeah.
That gesture.
She and I have a lot in common.
For sure, yes.
We're both heavily tattooed, for one.
Uh-huh. You have tattoos.
I do. I have three.
Do you want to rattle them off, just in case anyone's curious?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got Squirtle on my leg. I have Milk on my right arm, and on my left arm, I have the number 174.
Perfect. No further questions. No explanation Fantastic. Needed. Let's intro this single date with Ben and Caitlin. We barely talked about Caitlin last episode, aside from when she just so happened to observe the kiss between Luke and Ellie. But she is the one that Ben has picked for his first single date. She ITMs, "I'm happy to be going with Ben. I just want to see who he is." I'm like, same.
Same.
Also, wouldn't mind seeing who you are. You know, yes, it is episode two. They are picked up by a helicopter, which will whisk them off to the Yarra Valley. We hear more fist-pumping garbage music with the lyrics, "We are rising up when the helicopter is rising up." That's very subtle. That's a smart technique there. And Ben says he's not great with heights. So that's classic.
Really good. Do you know, I started to think that Caitlin might have been one of Wes's intended girls on this date. I don't know whether it's smart or not, firstly, to go down the rabbit hole of who was meant to be cast for which bachelor. Mm. But here, I'm getting a lot of this Christian parlance again. We're getting freakins. We're getting my goshes. We're getting shoots.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm thinking, you are with the wrong man.
Then we intro the third single date between Wes and Jade. And in narration, Wes says he's bringing Jade for a stroll in Melbourne. And I go, wait a minute, hang on, sorry, wait, just hold on a second. Who is Jade? Who are we talking about here? And it's a little bit weird, right? They flash back to some footage from night one of Jade and Wes having a laugh about, like, why don't we just leave together now? Bit of a classic night one joke. But they didn't actually include that footage in the first episode. So we're a little bit sort of off center here.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I noticed where the first episode had been recut to give more context. Another one was Luke and Ellie. We had talked last episode about how Luke had said, well, oh, I better top the most romantic thing I've ever done for you. And then he sort of like leaned in for a kiss. But it was actually a little bit more like consensual than that.
Yeah,
because
there's
an extra sentence on the end where he says, and they show you on night two, oh, would it be all right if I kissed you?
Yeah.
Same thing kind of here.
Right, yeah. Do you reckon there's a reason that two of the three women who are on the first single dates were barely visible in the first episode? Or is it just like, we don't want to make the first episode 3.5 hours long. We have to trim some things. It feels a little bit like an oversight here.
I think so too, because it's not like any of the women who were heavily featured on that first night then went home.
No, exactly. We weren't like loading up, you know, knowledge that we needed to know for the next episode in the way
that's
that
right. Yeah.
They often
like
do.
There's very, very little here that's been established other than say, Luke and Ellie and Ben and Ellie as a plot point that continues into this episode and the Holly thing as well. But we'll get to that.
Yeah. And it doesn't like dramatically ruin this episode in any way. It just feels like, oh, I wonder what the thinking is there.
Traditionally, you would expect the bachelor to give his first date or to offer his first date to someone who we know a little bit already from night one.
Yeah, I will say like Wes sort of explains himself or at least sort of justifies this by saying like he might be closer with Bria and Holly, but he's letting himself fan this spark that he felt with Jade. And like when he explains it that way, I do honestly kind of respect it in the sense that like it is only day two. Let's keep our options open. I don't want it to feel limited to just a couple of people. Because I think what we felt last season was like, already by the first couple of episodes, we had too firmly established who the front runners were.
Absolutely.
And so we just weren't interested in... Now, obviously, that is still happening with plenty of people on this season, as we have 20 women remaining and we only know about half of them. But that's how it goes. But, I respect it on that level of just like, yeah, why not? Let's have a third, person throwing their hat in the ring.
There's much more uncertainty in this season, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah. So if you don't remember, Jade is the one who is looking for someone who can speak the language of physical touch and ignite the flames of chemistry. So it's lucky she is on a date with the very sexually experienced Wesley Senna-Cortez. So Wes has done some research and picked out a few Melbourne spots for these two out-of-towners to explore together. And judging from the first destination that he chooses, he didn't really go much further than Googling the word Melbourne. Because they've settled on Hosier Lane, the iconic street art-lined laneway in the CBD. Also strikes me as funny that it's Hosier Lane, because I'm getting the impression that Wesley is looking for someone he can take to church.
Yeah, all right.
You spent much time down in the Hosier Lane? You probably, like many people who've lived in Melbourne, went there once or twice?
Yeah, I did go there once or twice. And recently I learned that there was someone else who might have been there once or twice, who also has a little bit to do with The Bachelor. And, in fact, has quite a bit to do with this season and this episode.
What are you talking about?
Well, my friend, I would like to introduce you to the exploits of Angie Glavas and the music video that she has done for a song called Ride, featuring DJ Butcher, in which she dances. We did talk about this in our preview episode.
You touched on this briefly, yeah.
I am now ready to show you.
Oh, wow. There she is.
There we are.
Oh, my God. Should I... Wait, how long ago... Oh, this was long before The Bachelor was there, right? I shouldn't be looking out for the tag that they do.
6 years ago, right? And yeah. So I want to show you a little bit of what happens here. We talked about how Angie finds a pair of shoes with magical properties.
That's right.
I want you to experience this just for yourself, okay?
Okay.
Very quickly.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about what type of shoes these will be. Okay, they look like normal shoes.
They do. But all of a sudden, there's a lot of confidence inspired. And what's this?
She's ripping off her jacket and she's got a shirt underneath. Whoa, she's throwing a jacket in front of the camera. And now she's got a whole new outfit and it's funky.
It is a funky pair of tights and a blue shirt.
Yeah. Oh, and she's boogieing. Wow, she's really busting a move.
Doing a boog in Hosier Lane.
Holy moly. So, Wes and Jade bond over being graphic and interior designers, respectively. So, the street art thing of it all sort of actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, hang on a second. Am I actually kind of enjoying this?
Oh, I enjoyed it as well. I didn't think it was because of Wes, but I enjoyed it because of Jade.
That might be it. That might be it. I think both of them are bringing something to the table here. I think also it's just well produced.
Yeah.
So Wes pops into a shop and grabs a can of red spray paint, telling Jade that they can paint whatever they want. Jade says, "You love the world. I love the world." Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, let's are the world.
Yeah. Let's paint the world, and we'll put a W in Brazil and a J in Australia. She's imagining a life where they live on opposite sides of the world.
As it should be.
That's right. But what I noticed here that I really liked, and I wonder if this occurred to you, is that they have not blocked off the whole street.
Yeah.
Nor have they, like, hired extras to hang around unobtrusively in the background like they often do in the American version of the show. It's also not, like, a fucking flash mob like we saw on Golden Bachelor. But, like, you can see people wandering into shot. There are folks in the background who are filming the proceedings on their iPhones. And I think that lends everything here such an air of realism and authenticity. Like, to me, I felt less like I was watching a reality show and more like it has this sort of like documentary element that felt so refreshing to me.
It grounds it in 2023. This is the other thing that I felt about Jade in particular, was that she seems extremely normal.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I feel like she is really lending this show at this point, is this air of her own authenticity. She's not being a character. She's simply being a person on TV on a date who is aware that she is being filmed and trying to ignore it. And in this situation, it really, really works.
Yeah, and I think it is effectively bringing the stakes down to earth in a way that is clearly a goal for this season. And it's not, it doesn't feel like they just ran out of money or whatever. Like, it feels to me like this is actually the idea. And yeah, it really starts making sense to me here.
Whereas last season, for example, we would complain when they went to a date and it was them on a swing or having a glass of wine somewhere or something like that.
Mm.
Perhaps they are right in that there is something to the way that Melbourne lends itself to cheap fun.
It's a fun way to put it.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I do.
This is inexpensive for them to produce, but it is also meaningful in the way that it brings them together and grounds them as actual people rather than The Bachelor and aspiring influencer on The Bachelor.
Yeah, it's more focused on the actual people, I think.
Yeah.
Even though it's very brief, you know? Ben and Caitlin's helicopter touches down in the Yarra Valley. And Ben tells us this is where he's from, so he's excited to share it with Caitlin. Fucking rich kid vibes.
Fucking A.
And they arrive at the Levantine Hill Winery, where they are served caviar, oysters, and orange wines. And what happens on this date is it's not good. There's a huge, long pause where Ben is looking for something to say. Caitlin is waiting expectantly as he ums and ahs and pulls something out of his teeth. Kind of rough.
This was not a good date.
Mm.
These two people were not meant for each other, and this is kind of why I wish there was an amount of, like, an air of expectation in the first episode that sets us up with something with Ben and Caitlin to continue with.
But yeah, if we were following a plot, like if we were seeing this thing peter out, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I love that we are tugging on the narrative thread that was established in the first episode that Ben does not know how to express himself. So firstly, he says, like, I don't know how to, like, say what I'm feeling.
Mm.
At this point, I'm wondering if he knows how to say anything.
Yeah, he admits he's not as confident as he thought he would be. He's out of practice with opening up and tends to avoid questions about himself. And he's going bright red as he admits this. And in ITM, Caitlin says she feels for him. And, like, I watching this, I'm like, I understand this. I can relate to this. This happens to me every now and then. You know, I can understand how it would be hard for him. But it does also just make me feel increasingly irritated about the casting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just like, this shouldn't be happening on the show. Like, somebody, this is a sign that something has gone wrong. And I understand and appreciate that this will be, this is the beginning of an arc that will change. But for right now, I'm just like, this is a mistake, you know?
Is a mistake in the context of how we have viewed The Bachelor for so many years, because he is supposed to be impervious. What I think the lesson learned from Warner Brothers and from Channel 10 might be here is that as they have presented these bachelors as impervious, we have disliked them more and more, and they have made worse and worse television.
Mm.
The hole that we are in now is because there's nothing to be gleaned from someone like Jimmy. He is cardboard.
Yes, that's true.
The idea that these men are whole and flawed and fallible?
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that I've been asking for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, in a sense, unbelievable that they have cast a man who appears unable to talk.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that we are presenting a more warts and all version of The Bachelor. And that phrase is important, I think, warts and all, because if you think about Felix and Thomas last season, that was all warts.
Yeah.
You know,
here we're getting some warts, now, but we're also getting some all.
We're getting all, and that is the, we were talking in the last episode about how they've worked out how to maybe, like, rein it in a little bit, and I think maybe this is the right version of that. Hmm. I'm obviously open to be proven extremely wrong if one of these men, and when one of these men does something incredibly
sure
fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm liking this so far.
You're convincing me. I felt this dragging the episode at the time, but I think you're right in that I will come to like the payoff, you know? Caitlin chuckles to herself and wonders aloud whether the other dates are going as well as this one. And in ITM, Ben puts his head in his hands and says, "Does this have to go out to the nation?" Interestingly, uses the word nation instead of like the country, because I think this is bachelor terminology. He says, "I'm sure there's no amount of editing that can even try and put it together to make me look good." This is what I say to Max at the end of recording every episode of this podcast. the note that I wrote down is that he has a terminal Riz deficiency.
But I
think you're pulling me around to the idea that like, under the right circumstances, with the right person, and with the amount of like, you know, he can snap back into it, hopefully, you know. I just hope it doesn't keep me waiting too much longer.
This is what I like about Ben, because we can already see that he's good in front of the camera. He is good and personable in the way that he says, "Oh, fuck, that sucked."
Yeah, he's okay. He's better than the other two in front of the camera, if you ask me.
I think so too.
Wes and Jade wander through the block arcade to the Hope Town tea room to Cafe Andiamo. And thanks for asking. Yes, I am charting these on my big map and putting red string in between each location. And yes, Max, I am concerned that they start at Block Arcade, then they wander northwest to the Hopetown Tea Room, and then they have to double back directly past Block Arcade to get southeast to the Cafe Andiamo, the DeGrave Street Mall.
Don't like that at all.
Not cool. I don't like it. What's happening? Maybe they're airing it out of order, but like, don't do that to me.
Could they not get a booking anywhere else?
Oh, I don't get it. I don't get it. Also, at the Tea Room, they order a hot chocolate and an oat latte, which, like, fine. Oh. But also, it's a tea room, and the next stop on your itinerary is a fucking cafe. What's going on?
Yep. Who do you think ordered the hot chocolate?
That's my very next question. I'm almost sure that Wes is a hot chocky boy.
Me too. Yeah, he strikes me as a hot choc.
Another question I have is, so Wes, let's assume Wes is the hot chocky boy. That means Jade is getting the oat milk latte. Do we reckon she's sending like a subtle queer symbol here?
Is oat queer?
Oh, yes, Max. Absolutely.
Well, I don't know about this.
Oh, yeah.
Why is oat queer?
I don't know. It's an accepted truth that like, okay, if you're a fruity looking person, if you've got your hair dyed blue or, you know, whatever signifier you like, if you walk up to your barista, they will probably look at you and go like, "Oat milk?"
Oh.
Obviously, people are allowed to have their own preferences. And like, you know, we're talking in generalities here, but I think it is a known thing. What do you order as a coffee drinker?
I order a cappuccino.
Holy shit.
What are you saying?
I'm just like, it's so funny to me to go into a cafe and be like, "I'll have a cappuccino." No further
That's
questions.
That's what I want.
It's great. I love it. That's almost the, if I were to imagine the Max Quinn coffee order, that's perfect. I'm normally a black coffee drinker, really.
You do like a black coffee. I know.
I like a black, but I do, I'll also get like an oat milk dirty chai, and that feels pretty fruity to me.
That's fruity as.
Yeah. Glad we've touched on that. It is Melbourne after all, you know, had to come up at some point.
Mm.
At the cafe, they eat lunch and Wes tells Jade that over the last few years, he's decided to take more risks. We're hearing this again. And Jade says she could sense how nervous he was last night. And Wes said that her ability to make him laugh while he was in that headspace is the reason that he brought her on the date. I gotta say, this all played out pretty quickly, but I was pretty charmed by everything that happened.
I liked this. Yeah.
And I don't even necessarily know a huge amount more about Jade or Wes, honestly. But I'm just like, I can feel there's a natural sort of chemistry, or at least like these are two people I'm happy to, even Wes, I'm like, these are,
it
in
was
this
affable,
environment.
Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Totally. Yeah. I'm happy to be around them for a while.
What I think it was that Jade was able to say, "I could sense that you were feeling this way." And Wes was able to validate that. And
he rolls with it.
Yeah. In the way that he was able to say, "I was vulnerable,
yeah,
and here's the specific vulnerability that I was feeling," and for her to have alleviated that, I don't know, I kind of felt that was pretty nice.
Yeah, and the fact that he's like, "You're right to have spotted that, you know, like,
yeah,
you've noticed something about me, you know." Yeah, these things are good.
I like that from Wes.
Ellie and Luke joke about how Luke almost competed in the Olympics for rowing, and Ellie laughs and requests that he paddle them over to those ducks over there. And then we see that sweet duck fuck footage again. Oh my God, this is a family show.
In slow motion.
It's crazy. They won't allow us to have fantasy suites in Australia because we're all too, you know, pearl clutching or whatever.
Yeah.
Although, actually, that's a question I haven't even thought about for this season.
Hmm. But they will let us double duck dare. We're yeah. double dipping in the double ducks.
We're going to see the double ducks double fuck.
I also want to take back something that I said in the last episode, which was that I didn't think that Ellie had riz, pizzazz, in the way that she communicates. But I actually think that Ellie is a fabulous straight woman.
Yeah, I actually think Ellie is really good on this episode.
Me too. I was very, very endeared to her.
Yeah, I'm getting what everybody's fighting over to a degree. And not just that yes. she's extremely beautiful, but also, like, she's doing some stuff that, like, feels like both, like, good bachelor play and also, like, good humor behavior.
Well, know? That's it, right? She's funny and in tune with what should be happening.
Yeah. So we watch Luke struggle with the oars for a bit longer, and then Ellie ITMs, "The wind blew us back to the shore, so we got out and went and sat by the fire."
Just right.
It's one of the funniest things all episode, I think. Luke is looking to impress by building the fire on his own. He's a lumberjack after all. But he struggles to get it lit, and Ellie doesn't tell him that she's noticed the fire starters at the bottom of the fire pit. Funny stuff. Ellie asks Luke to show her how to split some wood. This is the point where I'm like, she is such a seasoned player of this game.
She knows.
She knows what she's doing. She's got him wrapped around her finger. Luke absolutely loves this, and she plays it perfectly where she's, like, very proud of herself and very happy with him for showing. You know, like, it's like when you're dating a musician and you're like, "Oh, will you show me how to play a chord or something?" You know, like...
Mm-hmm. As someone who's dating a musician currently...
Right.
Look, the first time that I was shown how to play a chord, oh boy.
And it's great for you to finally figure that out.
I know, we've been in a band for so long, and I never have known how to do it.
So this is where Luke gives Ellie a present that he's bought for her. It's this leather-bound journal, which he says she can use to write about whatever she likes, but he suggests it'd be nice to write a bit about your time here, maybe the time we spend together, and then who knows, one day we might be able to look back at it together. Pretty cute, Max.
I thought this was cute. I also thought it was weird that this leather-bound book was embossed with Wesley Senna Cortez.
Yeah, he just found it lying around.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh, you know, you could. There's some pages at the back probably that you could scribble in. There's some shit about Deuteronomy in there, but fucking don't worry about that."
That's right, yeah. They share a kiss. There's a shot of them that looks like they are making out whilst sitting in the fire pit, like being roasted alive, the way that they framed it, which I really enjoyed. So let's talk about this group date. I'm very excited about this. The three boys and Osha wait by a pool as 12 of the 20 remaining women approach. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I guess they're doing some kind of swimming pool date instead of, you know, doing the date that we normally expect to see them do at this point in the season. Nah, just kidding. It's an underwater photo shoot group date, baby. You might dress up like a big chicken and hold an or a lobster. See you. I am so thrilled. I thought I was fully faked out by this. I was fully tricked. I was like, well, they've decided, you know, we're making a lot of changes in this new era. We're skipping the photo shoot group date. We're back.
You texted me at the end of the episode and you were like, this was so good. And I was watching specifically for the point at which I was like, Xavier's back in. Yeah. This was it.
I think this was it for me, yeah. Although, honestly, I think I sent that text when I saw the ducks fucking. Because I know we've been talking so much about bird sex lately. Anyway, the women have been handpicked by the men, so there are some surprises with the order here, or the segmentation, the team
selections.
Yes, Luke is shocked to see Ellie there because he didn't pick her, and we learn that Ben put her name down. So this is some really good love triangle shit. Jade also appears to be there, who also had a single date earlier, but it's not really remarked upon. She's very much in the background of this.
She's just one of Wesley's girls.
Yeah. So Ben chose Angela, Anastasia, Natalie, and Ellie, and their theme will be Swan Lake. Luke has picked Arthi, McKenna, Madison, and Lisa to channel Poseidon, the god of the sea. And Wes has picked Holly, Jade, Angie, and Bria, and their theme is, quote, moving heaven and earth below the surface. What's that mean?
One of these feels a little forced.
What's going on here?
There's a bit of baptism to this, isn't there?
Oh, I didn't think about the dunking, but you're right.
Oh, I thought so significantly about the dunking, and I'm going to try and find the photo, and we can either attach it to this episode or we can simply talk about it. But there are lots of photos online of Wesley simply baptizing other men.
Yeah, I think you talked about this on our preview episode.
That's right. He's standing waist deep in the water at a Hillsong church, and he is, he's bringing other men into the faith.
He's splashing his religion around.
Splishing and a splashing. In fact, yeah. I found it here. Let me show you what I'm talking about, and I want you to experience for the audience the extent to which he is really splashing.
Wow. Yeah, wow. I mean, look, splish splash, he was taking a sacrament?
He was taking a sacrament, and he's holding up this other man, this smaller man, who's wearing a t-shirt that says, I have decided, and they are in a pool of water that is at least up to their butts. They are all wet.
It's definitely a pool.
Yes, something really baptism-y about this date.
For sure. Yeah, yeah, that's a great pull. I didn't think of that at all. So each man will pick a woman to come back to their place after the group date. And also, like last season, the women who are picked to go on the group date will also be the women in danger at the rose ceremony that night. I love this.
Me too.
This can stay. I like this a lot. Because I think the way that this is set up, we know that this date is going to be pretty silly. But we also know that it's going to have actual stakes. And I think that's the perfect combination.
Stakes on both sides too, because there's payoff. I could get invited back to this man's batch pad, but also danger.
Right. You could win, you could lose, but the one thing you know for sure is you're going to wear something weird and take some bad photos.
I fucking love this.
Incredible. So Holly was invited by Wes, but she ITMs that she is keeping her options open and she wants to chat to Ben a bit more.
Mm.
And she conveniently walks in on Ben getting his makeup done. She just strolls in.
Oops.
And asks how he transitioned from modeling to sustainability. And he looks deep into the camera as it's being reflected in the mirror. Like, he looks into the mirror and he looks right into the, like, right at you as you're watching this.
He's so good at TV.
He delivers a very boring monologue. I have to disagree. I don't know if this is, like, I get that, he knows what he's doing, but
knows his mark is what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's talking about upcycling bananas. He's talking about, whatever. I truly zoned out.
I love that he's upcycling bananas.
Oh, look, I'm very proud of whatever that is.
You never heard of B3, Xavier?
I know about bananas. I'm not too sure about
upcycling. You thinking what I'm thinking? I think I am B4.
What's upcycling? Not much. What's upcycling with you?
Good.
Uh-huh. This is a parasocial gaze. He's looking directly into your eyes, dear viewer. And I believe this is him, doing the pitch. This felt like commercial to me, This felt like he's like, you too could be an investor in whatever I've got going on. But he does not do what I would consider to be the very obvious thing here, which is after he's done answering this question, he doesn't say, Holly, thank you so much for asking. Please tell me about how you became interested in sustainability. Instead, what he does is nothing. He just fucking sits there. And then it takes so long for him to think about what to say that Holly, we cut to an ITM of Holly saying, I do not know how to flirt. And this sort of broke my heart a little bit because she's like taking the blame for his complete lack of social awareness here.
Yes, she is not at fault for Ben's inability to sustain a conversation.
Right. So she gets the message and she walks off saying, all right, warmest regards, best fishes. She does a quick little pose in his mirror on the way out.
Smart.
I found this almost irresistibly cute.
So charming.
I love, this is like maybe the purest distillation of a charming thing to do on this show. And again, she ITM, in ITM, she cringes at herself with this like dopey music cue played over the top to make it seem like she did something wrong. Again, I'm like, no, this is like a very pure moment of personality. I'm into it.
It's pure. It's a moment of personality. All that it's missing is being imbued with confidence and then also an amount, any amount of recognition or validation from the person for whom that gesture is intended.
Right, yeah. And I think the dopey music cue is a very cynical move from production in terms of like, we cannot have Ben look bad here. You know, God forbid we hold him accountable for having absolutely no chat.
I think a little bit differently, because I think that it probably serves a broader storytelling purpose. And please, can you remind me of this when we get to the end of this episode?
Sure. Luke takes to his sparkly makeup with aplomb, posing shirtless with a trident that is definitely specifically the trident used by Aquaman in the Justice League movie. I know this because it was extremely funny to me at the time that movie came out that what was described as a trident actually had five tines instead of three. God. You know, oh, you know about tines?
I don't know about tines, but I do know that Aquaman is also being heavily promoted in the ads for this franchise.
Totally. Yeah. In a way that made me think, like, are they going to bring it up? Is this going to be... But no, like, they're avoiding saying Aquaman. I think it's just like a prop they had kicking around.
Do you want to come back to the batch pad for some Momoas?
That would be so good.
Right?
Tines are the individual prongs of a fork. That's what they're called. There's a word for it, and that's what it is.
What are individual whips on a Cat O'Nine Tails? Are they tines also?
You know, I don't know. I don't think they're tines, but I don't know what they are.
Might be time to find out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was always funny to me that they called it a trident, even though it had five tines. And then they made the spin-off Aquaman movie, James Wan's incredible, like, underrated masterpiece, in my opinion. They made a really big deal of destroying that, what I would call the pentadent, you know, the five the five-pronged trident. They like, he's like, oh, I don't need, you know, there's some plot point where it's like, you already have a trident. It's like, oh, this old thing, he wrecks it and replaces it with a three-pronged one, because apparently this also annoyed James Wan, the director, as well. Anywho, it's something just for me on the podcast this week.
It's important to be a little bit selfish sometimes.
Sure, self-care. You know, I got to look after my own interests. The women are trying to work out what the deal is with Wes's photo shoot theme, which is a very fair question we are also struggling with. Greek-Australian rock crusher Angie, because she has a crush on the rock, asks if Wes is religious. And Wes says, yes, you know, I'm quite spiritual. He grew up in a family that valued going to church every Sunday, and he pursued that to the degree of getting a master's in theology. And Angie ITMs, I find religious and spiritual conversations quite stimulating, so I'm interested to have a conversation around hope and faith and see what that looks like for him.
You know, Xavi, we had a conversation around hope and faith on this very podcast just a couple of episodes ago.
We did! I was so thrilled by this. What does hope and faith look like to you? It looks like someone named Faith playing a character named Hope, right?
That's exactly right. The character of Hope is played by Faith Ford. What's insane. That about?
Absolutely insane. Holly, ITMs, I think it... Oh, it, yeah. So, in contrast to Angie, Holly, ITMs, I think at this stage I could possibly build a connection with Wes, but I feel like his connections with some of the other girls might be a bit stronger, and I'm definitely okay with that.
It's like the science girly has been like, I don't know about all this creationist stuff.
I think that might be at the heart of it, yeah.
The other part of this is that, so Greek Orthodox, suggests heavy Catholicism, whereas Wesley is mega Pentecostal. And the Pentecostals and the Catholics are both Christian, but there's conflict there.
Do you think Wesley would consider swapping in being Pentecostal for being Tricostal? Much like Aquaman? And now it's a joke for all of us. And now we're all glad I talked about Aquaman for that long. Anyway, it's time for Frankie, the underwater photographer, to lead these shoots. We've got Ellie as the elegant and gentle white swan, and Anastasia as the black swan who has a sex scene with Natalie Portman. There's also Angela, who has, in fact, she's mainly in the background, but she has a good moment here because she has, in fact, already mentioned to Ben that she cannot swim. And they play the clip of her saying to Ben that she cannot swim three times. Angela does, to her credit, try her best to keep up with the others and not become the ugly duckling off to the sideline. Although it seems like in this episode the ducks are having a bit of fun.
They're having a pretty good time.
We watch the shoot. It's very silly. The photos look fucking awful. The makeup is running immediately. The bodies are flailing around. The water is somehow too shallow and too deep at the same time.
And Xavier, what's this going to look like in New Idea with J-Mo?
Well, yeah, I'm really glad that, like, the message they received from we couldn't get a romance novel or a magazine or a website to publish these photos. That, like, the message they got from that is not, let's not bother doing the photo shoot. It's actually, like, this is licensed to do something creative and do something different.
Let's have fun. And it's going to be great. And it's going to go really well on social media. I can promise you that.
Because
you're making your people silly and fun and relatable.
Yes, exactly. Because I'm always doing shit like this.
Right. And same. Like, and the other thing is that it stands in such stark contrast to the Bridgerton-ness of the first episode. And I love that because suddenly we are going from, like, we're in beautiful, what did she say, puffy ball gowns to now, like, we're underwater and one of these women can't swim and it's dumb and it's fun.
And it's like chaos. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, Ben picks Ellie for the extra time back at the batch pad. So we have, like, firmly established this proper love triangle narrative that's just going to keep paying off. We watch Aquaman and his five damp broads try their best to create...
His five wet wombs.
Yeah. They try their best to create some semblance of drama, both in their poses underwater as they try and look epic and godly and whatever. Well, not godly. It is funny, actually, that, you know, this is another god. And then also when they come up for air, you know, they're trying to create some drama there because Arthi seems to lightly graze Lisa with her foot. And Lisa ITMs, Arthi, that little snitch, she kicked me in the head. Like, no, this isn't the accent. Wait, hang on.
What? Wait. It's because we've got to be like...
This little Arthi. Snitch, she kicked me in the head.
She kicked me in the head.
It's gotten worse somehow.
I sent my girlfriend a text tonight, and I did this impression. She was like, you're improving. And I was like, that is an awful thing to say to me.
Luke picks Arthi for the extra time, which must be a kick in the head to Lisa, who ITMs, honestly, that's his loss, darling. You know what I mean? Now I'm doing, what's the Incredibles character who makes all the costumes?
I thought you were doing costumes. Like Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah. Look, you know, the world's a great big place and there are lots of beautiful voices all over the world. So finally, it's time to find out what heaven on earth means. I know you've all been waiting. I know I was like, you know, at the edge of my seat, hoping for clues to emerge. And as far as I could tell from this reveal, I don't know if you picked up on anything I didn't. The reveal is that basically it's like Wes is not wearing quite as much facial makeup as the other men. And that's it. I could not determine any other difference. Rock Crusher Angie tries to make the most of this as it's her first time really spent with Wes. And, you know, she's putting the moves on. It seems to work. As she puts it, there was a little bit of hugging and touching and underwater flirting, which was kind of cute. And I'm going, okay, great. You know, finally we're seeing Angie, you know, coming out of the woodwork. Means big things for Angie, I assume. But then when it's time to invite one of the women back, he opts to bring clumsy country girl Bria. And he doesn't say anything about it here, but I know from watching this episode that he has got some news that he wants to share, a storyline that I think he wants to bring into focus. And I think it makes more sense for him to bounce this off the familiar face of the angel on his shoulder, Bria, than an untested quantity. Do you reckon, does that hold water?
I think that Yeah. I think that holds a great deal of water. The other part of it is that there's 10 years of difference between Bria and Angie. And perhaps admitting that to a woman who is older might be more intimidating.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That, like, well, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily like likelier that someone who is 20 something is, you know, okay with, well, I don't,
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. But like, we get to the relationship history in a minute, and hers more closely mirrors his than we might assume someone who is older has had more experience and has had more time in the outside non-Christian world.
That's a good
call.
Their
experience might have.
Now, I must have missed this earlier, but this is where I learned that all three bachelors are staying in separate houses.
Oh, yeah, which kind of surprised they did mention this earlier.
So I'm curious about why this is. Is it just a practicality of, like, they, you know, they couldn't find the right place for all three of them? Or my hypothesis is maybe that, like, the idea could be that more interesting stuff might go down in each house if the other guys aren't lingering around.
Because realistically, what did having the three men live in the same apartment accomplish in the previous season?
The only thing we got out of it, and I don't know if I liked it that much, was like a lot of the bros chatting and hanging out and being like, boy, oh boy, that date I had was a real rootin' toot. None of them.
Yeah, exactly
like
this, but we can go to the pub for that.
Sure.
Particularly in Melbourne, we can enjoy it over a pint.
Right. They've got these big glasses of beer there. It's crazy.
It's so good. And outside of that, in the first season, it was sort of like the only drama that occurred was when the other women were invited into the den of men. And even then, it took like Felix kissing a woman in front of everyone else and having no self-awareness, or fucking Jed playing drums in front of everyone else and having no self-awareness, or
right.
Thomas having simply no self-awareness ever.
My gut says that this might be a play for the reemergence of the fantasy suite.
I like this hypothesis. I had not thought about that, but I really like it.
I mean, maybe not a quote-unquote fantasy suite, because it is just literally going to be their houses.
Yeah.
But like the overnight date, I don't know if what stood in the way of an overnight date really happening last time was the fact that they were all going to be in the same place or not, but certainly with the amount of privacy, with the promise that cameras will be off, even if it's not like, you know, raunchy, whatever, like, you know, juicy stuff or whatever, I think that will still, even if the play is like, let's see if we can create a long lasting relationship, you know?
Yeah.
So Arthi tells Luke that she has been in two relationships and her last one was 7 years long. Luke says he's just had one long-term relationship. We learn that Arthi has a single mom and her family isn't happy that she's on The Bachelor. And she goes into this in some detail, which I found really interesting. She explains, you don't see a lot of brown girls coming on here, Sri Lankan and Indian girls doing what I'm doing. You're kind of meant to work as a doctor or lawyer or accountant, you know. And even though I don't have that support, I've worked on myself. But there's a lot of me trying to keep my mom and grandma happy, and I come last generally. I found this very meaningful.
This rules.
Yeah. And then Luke ITMs, and I'm hoping you might be able to translate what he means here.
Oh, fuck yeah.
When I told my old man I was doing it, he called me a pelican, so I can sort of understand.
I called someone a pelican just the other day.
I can't tell. A, I'm not super familiar with calling someone a pelican, although maybe I can guess from context that it's just like you're a silly Billy or something. But also, like, is he kidding in the sense that he thinks this is the same thing?
Oh, yeah.
So he doesn't, because I can't tell with this guy. This guy, one thing I've noticed about Luke is that he is, his mannerisms are difficult to tell, like, for me. Like, I'm not familiar with this kind of guy in the way that I think you are.
Yes.
And I think I find it very hard to tell in a way that sometimes people find with me. Like, it can be difficult to judge when this person is doing a bit or when this person is speaking authentically.
And same, like, I've made that mistake so many times, unintentionally putting my foot in it. In this instance, Luke is saying, yeah, I can kind of relate because my fucking stepdad called me a pelican. Like, he is self-aware in this moment.
Okay. You know, I want to believe that. I'm sure you're probably right. There was a moment where I, you know what, I was pretty much 50-50 until asking you that I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. Like, I don't think you get it, my friend.
No, I think that he gets it, but I think he gets it to the extent that he knows what he doesn't get.
Yes, and he's making a joke about how his experience is very different. But he continues, to have that strength to go ahead and do it, she has a lot of emotional intelligence, and her willingness to give it a go is admirable. And I like that a lot. So even, you know, even when I was not sure about the first thing he said, I was like, good on you.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Luke that I want to give him the benefit of the doubt in situations like this, because you can see him come around and have the cognizance to go, even if I don't fully get it, I at least can point a finger at it and go, that's where.
Yeah, and he can identify when he doesn't get it as well, which I think is just as important.
Yes.
Yeah. Luke asks if she's ever had a kiss on the first date. She says no. And he says, well, I'd better bloody tick that off too then, doll. Which, like, I wonder if you were charmed by this. You're giving me a big smile. In my opinion, it wasn't too bad. But also, at this point, he's now 2 for 2 with referring to kissing someone as fulfilling an obligation of some sort.
Yeah, no, this was no good.
I think that's something we've got to keep an eye on.
This is the part at which Luke can improve.
Look, the kiss lead-in line is like an underratedly difficult strategic element. Or, you know, not even strategic element. Let's not boil it down to that.
Human
but like,
element.
Right, right. And it's like an awkward thing to have to do at any like point in your life, let alone in front of a million people or 240,000 people or whatever, you know?
Yes. Maybe the keys to the castle are simply these. Can I kiss you?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the thing. It's just like, we're actually overthinking it a little bit. And like, let's just say, like, would you be okay? You know, or yeah, can I kiss you? It's perfect.
I feel like that is all anyone needs in their back pocket for these situations. Where if you are so feeling the vibe and you are so confident that it's going to happen, here are your four words.
Right. Make sure it's fine, yep. You know, and then get into it.
There won't even be a yes if there is a yes to give.
Right.
You'll simply be kissing.
Yeah. But they do kiss. Arthi ITM's physical touch is really important, and this gave me a bit of excitement to see where this could take us. Arthi seems into it. I don't want to, like, you know, remove that. I'm actually really loving Arthi in this moment, too.
I like Arthi a lot.
I haven't write down a huge amount of things that she was saying, but I was feeling that good energy from her here.
Me too.
I also really, really love, as soon as they finish kissing, she goes, I'm a bit shy now. I think I need to have another sip of my drink. I was just like, this is so like a thing people would say. I don't know. Yeah. Hard to express how much I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Very sweet. They make out again in front of the door as she heads out. Very good. Love Arthi. Love to see a non-white person who is actually a character in the show.
Oh, that's the other part of this. I love that I feel like that's the other part of this.
Totally.
At the same time.
Right. And it's not really a factor, you know.
We take a moment to normalize or understand Arthi's brownness and her cultural difference, but it kind of is not important in the scheme of the way that we represent Arthi and Luke as an entity.
100%, yeah.
That's sick.
So Ellie and Ben sit at a batchy couch with some red vino, and when Ellie asks what he's looking for in a partner, he fucking freezes up again. Cue the habanera from Carmen. You know, he mutters, yeah, just a chill, but someone with some drive. Don't know what he's saying. He starts to sweat. It's pouring down his face. He's Albert Brooks in Broadcast News. And then he readjusts in his seat, and I think he sort of slightly regains his composure a little bit here. He tells Ellie it's been 5 or so years since he's been in a relationship, and he's working on breaking down his own barriers. And I think he's trying to be vocal about this stuff, even though I don't think he's necessarily overcoming it. He's like, this is what I'm up against right now.
I like it.
Yeah. Ellie's impressed, and she says that the fact that he's working on himself is attractive. Which is a perceptive thing for her to say. Mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion, it's a little generous, but it's also like she's in a position where, you know, she has to be rewarding this in him. Firstly, because like it is good. Like, yes. You want him to keep doing this. You don't want him to stop. But also, like, she's in the position where she has to be saying yes to everything because she's the she's the contestant, he's the bachelor. In my opinion, I'm like, let's not keep doing this. Let's not, like, let's, now, Ben, we have kind of absorbed this as a plot point. I would love to see us move slightly beyond this. But I am also here for it. You know, I'm not exhausted by it.
I'm not exhausted by it either. I think that some of this comes down to, like, storyboarding, where if you are to craft the arc of each character by episode, last season we got very, very hamstrung by the narrative of Jess Navin and Damien and the way that we could not just, like, we couldn't jump that hurdle. And the show thought it was so interesting that there was polyamory happening that we had to just keep fucking standing on that rake. But I would hope that the way that a properly crafted narrative might come across for this show is that now that we've seen Ben stand on the rake, land on his face, fail to hurdle the hurdle.
Yeah.
Three separate times in this episode. Yeah. Next episode, we're starting to get a little bit better.
Now's the time to push through it.
We don't have to make a full recovery, but there is now room for growth, almost redemption in the way that we are perceiving Ben as a flawed bachelor.
Ellie ITMs that Ben is such a kind person and she had a great night, but she's still thinking about Luke as well.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It makes sense. It's paying off. Absolutely, you know, fine. It's honest. Yeah. At Wes's pad, Bria says she's only ever dated one person for about 9 months or so before it fell apart. She asks Wes about his dating history, and he says, I actually never had a girlfriend, and obviously grew up with Christian values and trying to do the right thing and not be another reason for girls not to trust men.
No.
Interesting.
I hate
that. Do we want to stop on that, or?
Oh, I just think it's such a such a straw man.
I agree. I think he's absorbed that from somewhere, and it's not helpful to him. Personally.
It's not helpful to him. It is not helpful to how he perceives women as capable of being strong and capable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not helpful to the narrative that, like, a good man saves a woman. Do you, like?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all tied up in this very patriarchal sphere of how a woman might be perceived in her relationship to a man.
Yeah, and I'm very wary about how we talk about this because I'm not interested in talking about virginity in a way that, like, is not sort of, I get, what am I saying here?
Well, look, I think I understand what you're saying, and I feel like same. Like, I'm not interested in making Wesley a villain. I'm not interested in talking about a virginity as something that needs to be laughed at, goaded.
Yeah. I think broadly, like, conversations around virginity in popular culture are usually really bad in a lot of different ways.
I agree.
And I don't know necessarily, like, what the, like, good ways forward are, apart from just being like, oh, that's interesting. Or, you know, like, wow, that must, you know, come with some challenges, but, like, good on you. You know, like, I don't want to make him feel bad about it. There are other parts of him that I'm not into that have nothing to do with that, and that's its own thing.
This is
thing,
kind of it, right? Like, but those parts sort of feed each other in a way where he's like, I've stayed a virgin so that women don't think bad of men.
Yeah.
And that
to me feels troubling in a separate kind of way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But then the other part of it is, like, look, if you've been listening to our previews for this show, if you've been listening to this show for some time, you know that this has been something that I have put my money on.
Oh, yeah. We should give you your flowers.
Wesley is a virgin.
Yeah.
And
congratulations. Look, sound the alarm. Fireworks are going off for our friend Max Quinn for being smart and clever.
Look, predictive analytics gives us an amount of insight into.
Well, it's such a thing for the Bachelor series. Like, virginity is a big part of it. The like purity culture. I guess we have talked about a lot of this stuff, but like, it will be really interesting to see how the Australian season and how a 2023 season handles this topic. Whether it will be in the same sort of sensationalized way that open relationships were handled last season.
Right, right.
Or whether there'll be some attempt to like step up to the plate and sort of like, rather than just like bringing the topic to Australia's attention and allowing the conversations to happen where they may, like whether there will be some kind of like useful or, you know, socially progressive like sort of conversation that the show is willing to actually engage in. I'll be interested to see that.
I don't think so, but I also no, think I that that's the purpose so. Of what we do here on this show.
Exactly.
And so
we're hoping to fill in the gaps, I guess. I think you and I would love to do some more reading about this and like
and me as well. And we should bring in Jody McAllister again, previous guest of this show, who's an expert on how virginity has been, I don't know, fetishized in popular culture.
Sure.
I don't know. The thing that I want to get across to you, listener, if you've been with us for a minute and you've heard me say, this man's a virgin, this man's a virgin, this man's a virgin, is I'm not saying it in the sense that, like, this man's a virgin and, to borrow a parlance, suck eggs, you jump in Jehoshaphat.
Yeah, you're not going like, oh, this man gives me the vibes of, like, fucking McLovin or whatever. Like, you know.
No.
That's not the idea here. The idea is like there are signs pointing to this, and from like the way that his faith and his relationship history has been discussed leading up to this,
it's right there. It's clear. For me, it was in just blinking Las Vegas lights that just said sort of like, this man's a virgin. This is something that is going to be a topic of discussion this season, and. Oh, I'm happy that I was able to pick it up ahead of time, but I also, I'm conscious of not wanting to come across as like, this man's a virgin, fuck you, kind of thing.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. We've just learned it. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think even as this episode goes to air, as this episode of our podcast goes to air, there will be more discussion of this. We will be closer to understanding the angle that The Bachelor wants to take while discussing this thing. Let's even talk about how Bria reacts, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Let's talk about how this plays out.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, I never saw myself being a one-night stand guy. And as a matter of fact, I've actually never had sex. Bria is surprised. And then she says, really? Aww. Which is like an interesting, like, you know, there's something to that. I can't tell if it's like slightly infantilizing or if it's maybe just like Bria's energy, because I don't know Bria enough, like well enough at this point to know whether that's just how she reacts to stuff.
Both, although I lean the former over the latter.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, it's she doesn't mean it with malice. She doesn't mean it with judgment, although like, this is the kind of moment where somebody's like, preconceptions or biases will kind of just jump out. It doesn't seem like this is something she was prepared to deal with necessarily. And she, it is like broadly supportive, you know, it's not like, she's saying like, yuck or whatever, you know, or like, yuck. Get a life, loser, you know? And she doesn't say like, oh, I had a feeling or whatever, which also might be like its own sort of judgmental thing or whatever. She ITMs, it's rare to meet a 32-year-old attractive man with great qualities who's a virgin. I don't know whether or not that's true. I suppose it is, you know.
People
be fucking. Bria asks if that's because of his religion, which I think is a fair question.
Yeah.
Because it might not be, you know, and that would change the way that the conversation goes forward from here.
Do you have any friends who are virgins? Can I ask you that?
I would lean towards probably not.
Yeah, I was thinking the only friends that I have who are virgins are my mum and my dad.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Actually, I have a little niece. She's like, she's like
no.
2.5.
No.
What? You don't think she is? Dude. Oh, and of course, the Virgin Mary. My cat. Cat's name's Mary. Wen says, yes, these are my values, and I hold them so strongly. And sex is potentially one of the most vulnerable things you can ever do with someone. I mean, you're naked in front of another person. But this thing is, it's because of his faith and because of the life that he has lived and because of like popular culture and stuff like that. This thing must have built up like an incredible ball of stress within him, you know?
Fucking and he's trying to... You're right. I could be more empathetic.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's by choice. And, and so therefore, like, he has willed himself into this. But also, it must still weigh on him, you know?
You don't think about the stress of... I don't know, oligarch.
Living obligation. Living in a sexy world.
Just a sexy boy.
The man wanders around on fuck planet. You know, everywhere he looks, there's ducks doing it. There's goslings, you know, rowing in their boats and getting down. Yeah. Bria says she lives on a block of land and she walks around naked all the time. So it is kind of funny that it's like they are not from the same world, really.
No.
You know, he didn't choose when deciding who to declare this to. He didn't reach out and find like the very religious one, or, you know, maybe he didn't come into contact with the very religious ones just yet or whatever.
Yes.
We observed there were a few, but also we don't necessarily know to what degree and that sort of thing. But this is just who he talked to about it, and she doesn't really do anything wrong as far as I am concerned.
I think she's great in this moment.
Me too. She's trying to approach it with like some humor and like try not to make a big deal out of it. And yeah. Wes, to his credit, says, I have no issues talking about it, which I think is like he must have overcome quite a bit of like sort of mental stuff to get to a point of that. I was you know, a little surprised when he said, like, all my friends know, my sister knows, my dad knows, which is like, I don't necessarily think of this as something that you like come out to people about, but maybe it is, you know, there is an expectation that everyone is a virgin up until a certain point, you know, which thank God.
I think that expectation maybe extends to familial relationships if you are this Pentecostal.
Maybe that's it. Yeah.
The reason that his dad knows is that he's...
Would he have to tell his dad if he didn't? If he had sex or something?
If he's a pastor, maybe he has to be forgiven.
Oh my God. We are out of our depth here. At least I feel very out of my depth here.
Me too.
I also know... Yeah, he invokes the dad here.
Yeah. Forgive me, Father, for I have quinned.
But this is a dad that we have looked into with some level of detail, right?
This dad, listeners... You need to go back to episode 154 of this podcast if you want a little bit of information about this dad who is a pastor in America who has some opinions.
He's got some posts on Facebook.com. Bria says she still wants to get to know him. The impression is this is not a deal breaker for her. She's still into it. She, in fact, is more curious about him now. And Wes ITMs, it feels like the early stages of a relationship and I'm feeling hopeful. I'm very fascinated. This is all I can say here. It's like, I don't want to engage in anything that feels like shameful of Wes for being a virgin. I think, you know, there are problems with Wes that I think are very removed from this. There are lots of things to talk about with Wes and with virginity. And I hope that we can, you know, become a little bit more informed about how best to talk about this and what, you know, what that world is like.
Yeah. And listener, we will take your word on this because, look, as two very, very fucked...
Huge fuckheads. Just a big, big, big pair of fuckheads.
Massive fuckheads. Yeah. No, of course, yes. We want to take your word for how to best and most sensitively talk about this subject.
With that in mind, I don't 100% want to, like, navigate this like Wes is, like, a precious little baby. In the also sense that like... Like, I think about if I were to get into a relationship with somebody, if they were a virgin, you know, like right here and right now.
Yeah.
No shame to that person for whatever choices or whatever led to that. I don't strictly think I would be super interested in that myself at this point in my life.
Uh-huh.
And like, so that makes me then reflect and think about what the reactions from some of the other women and some of the other people in this show will be. Like, I'm curious about... is anyone going to make a big stinking deal out of this? And if so, like, is the world going to become a bad place for Bachelor viewers again? You know what I mean? Like, The Bachelor does like to find an other and other them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but the other tends to be of a taboo of the other end of the scale. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Oh, you've, as we saw in the last episode, oh, maybe you're a stripper, and yeah, that causes significant consternation.
Which, that to me is more cut and dry.
Yeah, this is complicated. We've never done this in this show before, and we've also never done it in the context of a man who arrives with the complication of being an extremely Pentecostal Christian and the system of beliefs that Hillsong propagates.
Hmm. All right, so more on this later, but let's move on. Thank God the women's mansion, quote unquote, has got enough room for a slightly more normal looking rose ceremony. I was reflecting on other off-model rose ceremonies we've seen in the past. Do you remember that time they did it in the outback and all the women had to be barefoot?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any others. So I might have to go back through the archives. Could put a little slideshow together or something. Anyway, Osha makes this speech here and he says, "Let me be clear. A bachelor offering you a rose does not mean you're mine, and you accepting a rose does not mean I'm yours. It simply means that the two of you have decided to continue looking for love. Where you choose to look remains up to you." Mm. And I found this very exciting, because what this is a declaration, a shot across the bow, and an announcement that they are looking to fulfill the promise of the premise in a way that they totally didn't do last season.
This is it, because last season this was signaled to the audience, but not really signaled as strongly to the contestants, that swapping, finding love in all kinds of places might be acceptable because you've been recruited here by X-Men and of course you belong to their pool.
Right.
I think that was a mistake. Now,
I agree.
Having Osha be so explicit about this in saying, you know what? Accepting a rose does not mean I'm yours. I won't hesitate. I will not wait. Whatever the rest of that fucking Jason Mraz song
is. One of my least favorite songs ever, I think.
I think it's a clever pop song, but it is so trite.
I'm sorry. The version of I'm Yours that I just came up with, which is 90 seconds long and is all of the parts of Jason Mraz's I'm Yours, except the skip it to beep up, ba doo ba doo doo.
Oh, yeah.
That bit cut out. It's an instantly, it's like a 3-star song instead of like a 1.
Straight away a 3-star song, and the kind of 3-star song that people will find attractive. It's white reggae.
Mm. Oh, we love white reggae here on
people
the Bachelor Pass
love
podcast.
White reggae.
So there is only one woman being sent home tonight, but Holly is very nervous that it'll be her. And it's not her, but we follow her POV throughout the whole experience. She gets increasingly emotional about how she's just not that into Wes. Which I imagine means that we're going to pick up that thread and run with it next episode. But here's the rose order just for shits and giggles. Ben calls out Ellie, Angela, Anastasia, and Natalie. Luke picks Arthi, McKenna, Lisa, and Madison. And Wes picks Jade, Bria, and Holly. So it is, regretfully, a farewell to rock crusher Angie, who says, "I was hoping to experience something pretty profound, potentially fall in love. I just wasn't expecting for girls to come into this and have a game plan. Not really sure what you meant here."
It feels like she's perceiving something of the other women that might not necessarily be there. Like, if you are in Holly's shoes, of course you're fucking accepting the rose from Wes and not falling on your sword to go home, because this means that you still have the potential to develop something with Wes, even though you don't think so.
Yeah.
But more importantly,
you can switch
the potential to develop with Ben as well. The thread that we were tugging on earlier that I'd now like to pick up on is that conversation between Holly and Ben, where she asked, "How do you get into environmentalism?"
Yeah.
And he doesn't return serve, didn't go very well.
Mm.
And I think that what is going to happen here is that Holly is going to reject Wes and then get rejected by Ben. In the last episode of this show, you talked to me about how you thought Holly might make it quite far.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how you're feeling about that after this episode, because I'm now starting to come to your side as someone who thinks that Holly might come 4, 5, 3 towards the end and then get cut.
Yeah, that actually feels really good to me. I mean, that doesn't feel great because, like, you know, Holly seems really nice.
We like Holly.
But yeah, I would say that's probably right. And in fact, maybe even based on the amount of screen time that she got in this episode, I would be willing to say, you know, I was saying like top two, and I'm like, no, maybe they've set up her story quite a bit. Like, it could happen, you know, within the next few.
You think that maybe like this could be like this week, in the next two episodes, she might be cut.
I don't know. Maybe not that soon. But like, yeah, I am less confident for sure about her making it to the very end of the show. Oh, yeah, let's commemorate the great work of Rock Crusher Angie on Instagram. This is something I love to do, which is that I took note of the Instagram follower accounts of all of these women when they were announced on the 12th of November of 2023. And then I also have recorded their followers immediately after, well, not immediately after, 24 hours or so after the episode was broadcast. So I can tell you that Angie Glavas, I'm now feeling... might
probably
be.
I wish we
would have been good to learn it, because we're never going to get back there, are we? She began with 970 followers on Instagram, and at the end of her run on the show, she had 976 followers on Instagram.
Smashed it. Really hit it out of the park.
I think one of them is me. Oh, it's the BOH pod. Oh, it's grim out there. Look, Instagram's not what it used to be, but you know,
sure.
Fantastic stuff. After the rose ceremony, Wes sneaks up to Holly and hands her a note, which she opens in her ITM, and we hear the first few words to the girl on the stairs, and then we get a to be continued in that beautiful new Bachelor font. Tantalizing.
This could have been addressed to any one of these women.
That's true. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, to the girl on the stairs. I mean, they've all been on some stairs at some point.
She's like, you know, that's me.
Whoa, that's me, yeah.
How do you know?
Tomorrow there will be an amusement park date, which I cannot wait to do so much fucking research on and exhaust everybody. And also a tennis date, which I think they've really misfired here. I think they made a slight whoopsie and a big mistake here. Why not make it pickleball?
Should
Everybody's
pickleball
talking about
date.
Pickleball right yeah. now. Anyway, we'll see who's at fault and whether there will be any love in this courting ball. Balls. That we've got to stop recording this podcast.
Well, Xavier, I'm all set.
Thanks, Match Quinn. This was a fun one.
It was a really fun one, Xavier Video Referee Noonan.
I was worried about this one, I'm not going to lie, because I was like, fuck, there's no fucking time. I think it will be a couple of days before we do our next episode. So, listeners, we hope you're enjoying this quality content. And it is content. Over here at the content mill over at BOH Industries. If you have been enjoying the show, we would love to hear what you think about these episodes, both of The Bachelors Australia and of Bachelor of Hearts. The best way to do that is to get in contact with us at BOHpod on social media. I miss doing the live tweets. It's just this schedule is crazy,
I know.
And also, I don't know if there's it seems like something's going a bit weird over on Twitter.com. I don't know if you've noticed. Anyway. But yes, come find us on social media. The other great place to hang out with us is on our Facebook community, where we are hanging out with past guests of the show, future guests of the show, present guests of the show, co-hosts of the show, listeners of the show, people who don't know what the show is and have just clicked on something on Facebook and then didn't really think about it very much after that. You can find us there at Bachelor of Hearts Osh Posting. Send us a request to join. We'll let you in. Come in. It's nice and toasty. The water's fine. And there's a couple of ducks fucking over there in the corner. if you'd like to support the show, you can find us on patreon.com/BOHpod. Chuck us a couple of shiny golden coins if you are nasty. What else do we have to say?
Listeners, we love you.
Love you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Running out of time, making most of what's before me, searching for